Hi everyone, welcome to STEPS audio channel. We are very excited to share our content from STEPS events to learn all about the latest trends in startups, digital media, fintech, future tech, and wellness in emerging markets. You can find us on Anagami, Spotify, and Apple Podcasts. Make sure to subscribe to your favorite channel, and we hope you enjoy the content.
So, my name is Sarah Toukan. I'm Jordanian, grew up between Jordan and Saudi Arabia. I've spent my whole career in product in a range of different industries. So I've worked in the autonomous vehicle space, in the prop tech space, in the food and beverage space, and in the fintech space. I am the co-founder and chief product officer at Zena.
Thank you, MP.
Hi, everybody. My name is MP. I am a senior vice president with MasterCard, where I oversee, amongst other functions, strategy and M&A. So if there's any interesting companies there in the fintech space, come talk to me. I'm originally from Brazil, but I've been in the UAE for the last 7 years, so this is home for me.
Thank you. Hi, good afternoon, everyone.
Is it audible?
Can you hear?
Hello.
Louder.
Oh, is it better now? Yeah. So hi everyone, I'm Deepak. I'm Vice President Engineering with Cast24. And my career is towards in the technology side. I've been working on the digital payments fintech industry for the last couple of years. I have been top-wise in AI on DS on the LinkedIn. This is the area which excites me a lot, and I love to have a conversation over this topic, the future of AI and DS and the fintech industry. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you, and I'll add a bit about myself. I'm from Ukraine originally and have been living partly in the UAE, in Dubai. I run a news media called Coins Telegram. We are focused quite a lot on crypto, blockchain, and fintech space. So we have a website and as well PR consulting agency. So let's dive deep in into our topic and how digital wallets and digital payment change in the current e-commerce landscape. So as we see, this industry is quite growing, and the market size of digital payments already surpassed in 2023 over $111 billion, and it's projected to grow to five more times to over $500 billion by 2032. And we see as well a variety of different startups and more established companies are offering different digital payments solutions, wallets, cross-border payment solutions, remittances, and so on. So let's discuss how do you see the current landscape of digital payments and wallet adoption, and as well, what trends do you see? So let's start with Sarah.
Thank you, Anna. So as you pointed out, the ecosystem is rapidly evolving, and digital payments and digital wallets are becoming increasingly important part of the ecosystem. In a report by WorldPay in 2021, a global report, they found that 49% of payments made in e-commerce were made via digital wallets. Yeah. This is up from 29% in 2016, so a marked increase. And even when you're looking at commerce and payments made in person, point of sale, digital wallets in 2021 globally accounted for 29% of transactions, up from 16% in 2021. So for any retailers, e-commerce players who want to provide the very best user experience and payment experience, they have to be offering digital payments via digital wallets and, of course, via payment gateway. So the space is rapidly evolving.
Thank you. MP, what current developments do you see?
Yeah, sure. So for MasterCard, digital inclusion is directly linked with financial inclusion. So the more we include people, and that's one of the trends, is trying to bankerize people, try to bring people into the financial economy, in the financial inclusion, the more they have the means to be digital citizens. So whenever a person is in a cash-based society, they don't have the means to buy anything online. They don't have the means to buy anything abroad. they don't have the means to benefit from a lot of services that for us are our day-to-day. A lot of you guys came here by Uber or Careem or calling a taxi via Hala, for example. All of us are using our digital devices to do purchases outside with digital payment methods. When you live in a society where you don't have that kind of reality, you're excluded from the modern world. So for us, one of the trends is benefiting from wallets and digital payments as a way of including people in the modern way of living. To complement one of the stats that Sarah gave, there's a research that showed that 66% of merchants show that they grow much more their businesses once they start accepting digital payments, either through online or through automatic payments on their physical stores. So it is really, it goes beyond just buying things. It's really a means of including people in modernity.
Thank you, Deepak.
I absolutely agree with what MP said. It's actually enabling the people, you know, that the cash management has been so much cumbersome from the user perspective. Think about the person going for the shopping, right? And they have to manage their own budget. They have to see it, how much cash they should carry in order to get the stuff. But now with the digital payments, the e-commerce industry has been benefit that you see your budget trends, you have the potential to check out loans. You have ability to even purchase things on the spot, even when you are not having the right amount in your bank balance. So the digital payment inclusion has taken has created a user experience, has enabled the user in a such a manner that there is an ability to thrive and to do the shopping more and with an ease.
Thank you. And as well, we see quite growing mobile adoption. So that's we have as well growing adoption of mobile wallets. And I would like to start with Deepak as a technical person, vice president of engineering. What's your opinion about mobile wallets adoption and what features and innovations are needed to enhance the user experience and adoption?
I think it is one of the most beautiful innovation in the fintech industry that has happened. Because it has literally taken away the digital inclusion has started a long back, right? When the people used to carry the cards and they have to make a payment using the card. But with the digital payments and the mobile wallet, this has taken it away. They don't have to worry about carrying the cash. They don't have to worry about carrying the card. You just go, you know that I am carrying a wallet in my mobile phone. It is safe. No one can steal it. And it has enabled the user in a such a manner that every sector of the society has been able to include into this right. So you don't have to be having a very good credit line. You don't have to be having a very credit score in order to enable to get into the digital side of the payments. You just need mobile phone and that's it. And the digital the wallets has seen its journey that it is not only dependent on the smartphone. So we just are not including the people who are just unable to have a very smartphone at the cost of phone. Even the feature phone user, like the simplest of the feature phone user, are able to make the transaction using their mobile wallets. Also, the mobile wallets doesn't need you to be having a big amount of money or big amount of credit line in order to use it. One of the areas which has been concerning to the user is about the security, but we have seen the leap of the time, where the security has been much more improvised and every financial system has seen the fraud because of the user sharing their passwords and their journey rather than the financial systems getting compromised. So I think it's a very beautiful innovation which enables the user in order to do the transaction in the easiest of the manner. Merchant doesn't have to keep as a point of sales machines. They can use only the QR code. Even the street sellers and the street vendor, they are able to take money in the form from the users from the digital wallet. They don't have to carry another POS machines or the credit card processing machines in order to get them enabled to accept the digital payments.
Sarah, you as well with your product, Vizina, offer digital payment wallets and as well different even tax transactions. So can you tell more about your opinion, what features are needed for the mobile wallets adoption?
Yeah, definitely. I think Deepak was spot on with what he said. People are looking, they're coming to expect to be with in other industries. When you're looking at delivery, it's instant. When you're looking at ordering something on Amazon, it comes the same day or the next day. So people have grown accustomed to getting instant access. And this is just as important in the fintech space. So as Deepak mentioned, you don't have an onerous account opening process. You're able to open an account very quickly using eKYC. So accessibility is a hugely important feature, getting an account set up in minutes. He also mentioned something I want to echo, which is not having onerous requirements in terms of how much funds you need to put into the wallet to start or bank account to start using it. Security is of the utmost importance. I stumbled on a statistic that actually shocked me. It was in a report done by Tunes where they looked at countries globally. I think they looked at around 13 or 14 countries at both developed and developing nations. So in countries including the US, UK, Philippines, Kenya. And I was really startled by this. Apparently globally, 62% of Gen Z don't have a bank account. They actually rely on mobile wallets or telecom wallets provided by telecoms providers. And it's for the reasons that we've spoken about, right? A very easy access, opening an account within minutes, reliability, security is something that's an absolute must, right? It's table stakes. And, you know, depending on the context of the, you know, which country that mobile wallet operates in, there's a lot of different features or products that have become table stakes. So, you know, having a debit or credit or prepaid card offering, remittances, a lot of them integrate stock investing. Players like Cash App in the US are very impressive. So they've integrated other features like very straightforward purchase of Bitcoin for those who are interested, really lightweight, easy to use, non-stressful budgeting tools. Yeah,
and you mentioned as well partnerships with telecommunications providers, and particularly I know that MasterCard does this. Yeah. You acquired the minority stake in MTN in South Africa. You have partnership with Airtel in Uganda. So can you tell more on that side?
Sure. So at MasterCard, we're not a cards company. We still have card on our name. We still say it's priceless, and I think everybody agrees. But we are a payments technology company. So when we look at financial inclusion and when we look at expanding our businesses, we have to look way beyond cards. So one way that people were included, regardless of banks, regardless of any of the card schemes in developing countries, such as you mentioned Indonesia, some countries in Asia, but here in my region for Africa, one of the ways that people got included in having some sort of electronic payment system was through the wallets of the telcos. That happened very organically. So people would get their cash from their work. They would go to the shop and they would take that cash and put it as airtime on their phones, as credit on their phones. Then those telcos started seeing that behavior and said, how about we enable people to use that money that they have to do other things. So then Deepak mentioned in developing countries, you don't have smartphones, iPhones, as we all have here, right? They have feature phones, but they are making use of a technology called USSD in which they send strings of code, strings of text as code to allow for a transfer. So if I go to a shop outside, I take my phone and I just type something like star 10 dirhams, star flow and star transfer, right? So they use those instruments as instruments to pay. However, that is very limiting for them because they can only pay to a person in their own country or a shop in their own city. That takes them out of the possibilities of e-commerce. So digital payments in light of the scenario of e-commerce is really a way to enable, like I said before, people to have access to commerce that is on the internet, and for merchants that are selling on the internet to have access to that volume of people that you have in countries like Nigeria, South Africa, Kenya, etc. So for MasterCard, instead of saying, hey, we're going to go with our traditional business, which would be enabling card networks, we said, we need to start with the reality of those markets. And the reality of those markets is that the telco players were already enabling people to do payments with their phones. So then what we did is we partnered with those telco players to layer the card network on top of the mobile wallets that they have. So at this moment, we have partnerships with the two of the biggest players in Africa. One's called MTN. We just closed a investment last week of multiples of hundreds of millions. I can't say the actual amount, but we did an investment on their fintech business. We also had done a previous investment in Airtel, and Deepak, my friend here, is a former Airtel employee. And for those two investments, we're working with them on several things to enable people. So we're working with them on putting the card on top of the wallets, and then people now have a credit card, like you said, with minimal KYC, minimal requirement, because it's based already on a financial instrument that they are using. We're also working with them for remittances. So people in the UAE send money abroad. People abroad send money to the UAE. And in all those countries, we have people working all across the region. So we're working also on remittances. Right now, through the MasterCard network, we cover 190 countries. Sorry, more than 100 countries, 60 currencies, and more than 90% of the world population are reachable through a MasterCard remittance solution. So this, for us, is the meaning of inclusion.
Thank you. And we started covering the topic of financial inclusion, and it relates mostly to emerging markets and especially Africa. So these emerging markets often have their own unique challenges and opportunities in the realm of digital payment space. So how businesses should address their strategies to cover this market? What do you think, Sarah?
So interestingly, if you look at the global case studies, it's the emerging markets, some of them who have been at the forefront of innovation in financial services and in fintech.
They're leapfrogging, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So you had countries, for example, Kenya, where M-Pesa started over a decade ago. They were amongst the very first. And they innovated in finance because there was a pressing pain point. As MP has mentioned, people did not have access to financial services, which they were in dire need of. And because the ecosystem was relatively underdeveloped, there wasn't so much red tape. So they became one of the first and a global case study in terms of very easy, convenient mobile payments. Another, let's say, gold standard is India with their UPI payment rails, which now are the global standard. The UAE has recently released their own payment rails, and they've modeled them off of UPI, and they've worked closely with the Indian government. As they say, necessity is the mother of all invention. So it's interesting. It's really bringing access to financial services in order to enable people to improve their standard of living, start to save for their families. And otherwise, I would say that really population in emerging markets have very much the same needs that we do in, let's say, developed nations. Mm. The developed nations have followed the leads of some of these emerging markets, including the UAE. They're really investing heavily in making sure financial services are more accessible and being at the cutting edge of technology.
And Pia and you as well worked across different regions. You worked in the US, in Asia, and now in the UAE, in Middle East. So what do you see? And as well, Sarah started on the side of cross-border transactions and partnership of India and the UAE. So what other examples do you see?
Yeah, so one example that similar to UPI in India is Pix in Brazil, which is the real-time transfer. So what Sarah said in the beginning about people expecting the same level of real-timeness that we have on our day-to-day. So we go in your phone and you do everything. Why can't you go on your phone and transfer money when you want? So countries are developing. Governments have a very important role to play, but private sector also has an important role to play. And we believe in coexisting with the different schemes in the market. Some schemes are going to be driven by governments like UPI and Pix. Some schemes are empowered by private companies like MasterCard. It is a trend to have different models in which the market solves for the problem. So when we one of your points was, how do we evolve? How do we go into a new market? I think you got to start with the reality of the market. You can't start with your own products and just say, I'm going to take Xena the way it is to Kenya. Because probably the needs of people in Kenya are very different from the needs of people in Saudi or UAE, right? So for any entrepreneur, for any corporate that needs to expand their business, it's always starting with the human behavior in that country. And in some countries, it's going to be wallets. And in some countries, it's going to be cards. In some countries, it's going to be local schemes. So it's understanding the reality of each market that leads to a successful implementation.
Absolutely. And which regions, which countries do you see the most advanced in terms of digital payments adoption?
I think once we have the card rails that we have now, for example, for us, I'll give an example of the UAE. A lot of people in the UAE historically had credit cards. Credit cards already had a tap functionality, but and we had the cards with the chip. Remember before we had, I'm going to date myself here tremendously, but some of you might remember before you had the card and you would put in a little machine and you would press a paper over it. Somebody reminds me, I see some nodding faces. So you would press in a carbon copy. Then we started with the magnetic strip. Then we moved from the magnetic strip that lasted for decades. We moved into the chip. That chip made the possibility of you just tapping your phone. Tapping your card. You could insert your card or you could tap it. People were not using the tapping function. The adoption of the tapping function only came when we switched to mobile wallets with Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, Google Pay. When that trend started, and that came a lot through the pandemic, people just got used to it. They just got used to tapping. Who here takes out their wallet to buy something outside? We all use our phones, right? You just sometimes you don't carry your wallet anymore. So that's some of the transformation that we see. And I think in this case, developing countries, because of how they already have some technology, they have certain advancements. But in others, because they don't have technology, they leapfrog these advancements and they go to other means.
And MP, just to add to what you're saying, we're talking about the next evolution of payments being pay with your face, which has already been piloted by the likes of Amazon and other players, yeah. Where you walk in, increasingly people have a digital identity. It's the same technology, for example, used in Dubai and Abu Dhabi in their airports.
Yeah.
You don't need your card, you don't need your phone. It scans your face, it deducts the wallet from your bank or digital wallet balance. Just a quick note to your question, Anna. China is one of the major players at the forefront. The volume of their digital payments is 2.5 times the entire Chinese GDP. And cash is virtually non-existent there.
Yeah, they have all in the apps, WeChat, with all these digital payments and etc.
That's right.
Yeah. And as well, I see generally Asia being quite leading in terms of digital payments adoption, especially as well some other Southeast Asian countries such as Thailand, Vietnam, and Philippines. And now we see as well different partnerships between the governments, like, for example, Singapore and Indonesia last year in November made the partnership for the cross-border transactions just via the QR code. And et cetera, as well, Singapore made another partnership for the same with the Philippines. UAE is as well, not the last, and I see Middle East and Africa as well, the fastest growing region in terms of digital payments adoption. So what are your observations, Deepak, on that end?
No, absolutely. So when we say that the digital inclusion in terms of number of transactions, the India journey is very delightful. If you see within the Asia Pac, when you say that the number of transactions done are eventually multifolds of the GDP of the country. And it all has come because of the major reason is the ease at which you can do the transaction and also the reliability of the transaction, right? When you are making a transaction, you know whether it's going to be successful or you're going to be declined. Merchant side and the payer side, there is no ambiguity around it. I know that, okay, transaction has gone through or not. That reliability is very important when it comes to the digital payments and its adoption as well. Second is about the ease of the payment. For example, as MP was saying about the evolution of the machines and the evolution of the way we do the payments, and Sarah has also pointed about that our identity itself is a digital payment identity. Right, they all moving towards this perspective that how many clicks or how many clicks that the user has to do in order to facilitate a payment, right? With the recent transition, the UPI, when we mentioned about, I have seen the leap of UPI growing. Now up to a certain transaction, you can make a payment in the areas where you do not have any internet, right? So that is enabling the users to the remotest of the area where you cannot think of the 4Gs and the 5Gs to enable to use the digital payments. So that is the confidence that the system is building up in terms of reliability, the engineering that it's providing, and eventually with the billions, so that kind of a TPS, the transaction per second, the systems are seeing. Then also the UPI is so reliable that we have the least failures and the least decline in the whole world. And also it is enabling the fintech providers because all the integrations on the bank side has been taken care. What you need to think of is innovation. How you add innovation on top of it. Your basics are done. You don't have to spend time, energy, means to develop those basic things. As a fintech provider, I don't have to go to the 20 of the banks or the various different money providers in order to do the transaction. What I have to see through is when a user is doing a transaction, what kind of innovation I can add it up to. Like, can I provide just-in-time loans to the user? Can I provide the ability to buy more when the transaction is happening? Can I schedule a transaction? With the tokenization, can I ensure that the transaction is happening when I'm asleep? I don't have to be awake at the night to see something is happening for my parents, my children, or for some transaction to happen, right? I don't have to worry about my signatures are changing every moment. I don't have to carry my checkbooks to make that happen. So the life has become easier. Towards the end of the month, as we were talking before, right? All this data is being captured and the insights are being getting generated. How much I'm spending on my fuel? How much I'm spending on my groceries? If I'm overspending or anything that I can schedule it to happen, it's of own. I use it every month. So that the aspect of the digital inclusions has to make the life easier. So that in the valuable time, we don't have to worry about the payment system. We worry about many other things. And the payment system becomes easier and easier for us. And that's where the various different Asian countries are way ahead. Because even if you look at from the regulatory and the government perspective, the entry money launderings and your fraud management and your currency management is so easier when it comes to the digital payment that it's in a favorable state to anyone. I can detect a fraud anytime. I do a transaction. There is a real-time fraud management system seeing, okay, you are not supposed to be in this region and you are making a transaction. Is it legitimate transaction or not? And similarly, when it comes to the anti-money laundering, the tie-ups between the UAE and the India, it's a very good initiative because as a tourist, as a functionary, as a business person, when I'm doing a business and I'm traveling, I don't have to worry about the currency conversions. Mm-hmm. I have to just remember my currency. Okay, I pay in X currency and I understand that. Else, I would be translating or doing the conversions in my head. Okay, if this is costing X, that means Y in my currency. Yeah. So it brings it very ease and it makes it cheaper as well.
Thank you. Unfortunately, we are running out of time. I feel like we can continue discussing it more and more. But yeah, thank you for sharing your thoughts with us.
Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed the episode. You can find our content on Anghami, Spotify, and Apple Podcast. Follow us on social media at Step Conference and let's stay in touch.